Smash presents Doctor Who, Time Lord Victorious, Short Trips, Master Thief by Sophie Isles. Read by John Coleshaw. Death is inevitable. Even when you think you hold all the cards, even when you're sure that you've won, you haven't. You might never win again. Actions, after all, have their consequences. Prompt and punctual as always, the Master stepped from his TARDIS. The ocean surrounded him, only held at bay by a webwork of glass. A plethora of sea creatures soared just on the other side. A graceful whale shark, wider than the corridor, stalked another, smaller creature. It glowed with an eerie light. The Master recognized the type, a pathetic dependent, scavenging waste organic matter. The soft shine of the glass caught another creature. An immaculate, bearded figure, carrying a blue cylinder under one arm. The Master adjusted the jacket of his Nehru suit and ran a finger down his perfect golden tie. After all, he should always look his best. Satisfied, he set off along the corridor. It plunged down ever deeper into the ocean. His destination was a shining black pyramid, the repository. A vault for the elite of the galaxy to store, be it as mundane as paperwork or as arcane as artifacts. For a fee, you could stash anything away, safely concealed, in the depths of an ocean, on a planet on the margins of space. But the Master was here to collect. It would be simplicity itself. He already had the skeleton code for the vaults. He had an appointment which would earn his way into the repository's depths via their access lift. He'd be long gone before anyone realized that something was amiss. The map would be his. The first person he encountered was a young woman in gold and purple uniform. He approached, utterly silent, but she looked up at the last moment. Despite a gratifying start of surprise, she smiled pleasantly. Director Maelstrom, we've been expecting you. My name is Georgina. Welcome to the repository. This way, please. Did you find us all right? Well, of course you did. You're here and on time and everything. Sorry if I babble. This is my first time being allowed to greet an official. I'm a bit nervous. The Master smiled benevolently.
My dear, you really mustn't be nervous. I don't bite.
She blushed. Of course not. Sorry, we're just down here. They emerged from the corridor into the repository's grand entrance hall. There were dozens of people here, mostly civilians, herded by mustered uniformed guards. The staff collected them into small, manageable groups and watched over their idle chatter. Each group waited at a door, which would lead to one of the myriad submarines which puttered away to distant repository complexes. To both the visitors and the guards, this was simply dull routine, despite the security team's heavy pulse guns, which were black and adorned with an angry crimson stripe. The Master kept his expression neutral as Georgina led him up to one security detail. The armed guards glowered, as armed guards always did, but stepped neatly out of the way to let him and Georgina pass. Behind them was a wall of metal, not glass, with a concealed door. Georgina pressed an ID pass to the small pressure point to one side. The light above it pulsed red. She smiled again at the Master. "You had the most glowing recommendation," she told him.
"The Advocate General is a good friend," he demurred,
In fact, the master had met the old woman just once for all of 5 minutes.
She recommended you, too. I mean, the repository. Your personal service.
Oh, well, we do take pride in our service here. With a ping, the small light became green. The door slid open to reveal an office area beyond. I'll leave you here. Our dedicated team will take you through the protocols, and then your assigned manager will be waiting. He let his smile falter.
Oh, you will not be escorting me yourself?
She hesitated just for a second. If that's what you would prefer, she said with a dimpled smile. It would be my pleasure.
You're very kind. I shall be certain to inform your employers how kind you've been.
They emerged into another concourse, but without windows. An oppressive, utilitarian space. More armed guards stood at the end of this hall, behind scanners and security walls. The guards watched them coldly. The master clung a little tighter to his blue cylinder. I'm afraid all personal objects have to go into one of the trays to be scanned.
Yes, I anticipated that. I only brought that which I intend to deposit, which does not need to be scanned.
She turned toward him, brow furrowing. Director, there can be no exceptions. But he held her gaze.
It would be a shame to have to go back to the Advocate General with disappointing news about how I was treated.
For a moment, he thought she had the confidence to stand up to him. But Georgina was clearly an all too willing component in the machinery of this place, keen to have everything run with smooth efficiency. And if that meant this favoured client got a little extra treatment... That doesn't need to be scanned, she told the security guard, who reached to take the cylinder from the master. The guard turned to a superior to check. But on seeing who had made the request, the superior merely smiled and let them both through. He bowed his head in gratitude to her, buttering his words with a charming smile.
A miracle worker! I'm so glad you insisted on escorting me.
The path sloped gently downwards, ever deeper into the ocean bed, and the concrete walls gave way to bare rock. The system had been excavated by lava, but he was impressed to note that they kept the passage scrupulously clean. Even so, there was something unsettling and claustrophobic as they descended. The neon orange lights only enhanced the effect. Then the cavern branched ahead of them. The manager's office is just this way, said Georgina, indicating the left-hand branch.
I would prefer to go directly to the vault, said the master. Is that down here?
He indicated the right-hand branch. Georgina blanched, but couldn't help nodding her head. I'm afraid we have protocols, she stammered. We don't allow clients down into the vault. Again, he held her gaze.
But you will allow me, won't you?
She almost succumbed, but she was too much part of the cog in the workings of this world. Rules were rules for a reason. It's not allowed, Director Maelstrom. I'm sorry. He had pushed her too far. He should have hypnotized her from the start.
No, of course not. Very wise. I assume I couldn't go that way on my own.
No, she told him, with a confused timbre to her voice. You'd need a pass card, and there are more guards.
Of course, yes, of course,
he agreed with a secret smile.
You've really been very accommodating, Georgina. Now, I imagine you're curious about exactly what I brought to your precious vault.
She blushed a little. Director, is this wise. Your assigned manager...
My assigned manager can wait. Now, this is for you to enjoy.
He opened the blue cylinder. Not long before this, the master had been on a jungle planet. The wildlife there was thriving. But the indigenous, intelligent species had just been entirely wiped out. In many ways, thought the master, that had been of benefit to the jungle planet as a whole. He was the only one who could share that benevolence with the wider cosmos. So he had helped himself to the weapon responsible. It was an enormous structure, reminiscent, he felt, of the great telescope inside Greenwich's Great Onion Dome. The weapon was an ingenious piece of technology, but dependent on inputted data to achieve its effect. He modified that so he could simply point and shoot, with the beam now focused, so it only killed one person at a time. It had also been hardly practical to transport that size, even with a TARDIS. Fortunately, the master was adept in various techniques of miniaturization. Now, it fitted easily into his hand. Georgina's gaze fixed upon it.
Give me your pass card,
the master told her gently. She didn't answer, but her right hand twitched towards her pocket. He raised the gun to her face, sweat beaded on her forehead. His voice became a steel edge.
I will not tell you again.
Shuddering, the girl pressed the card into his gloved hand.
You've been very accommodating, he told her.
Despite everything, she was gratified. He let her have that moment and pulled the trigger. A single magenta bolt slammed into her back. Instead of continuing through her, like a conventional laser weapon, it seemed to wash into her. Georgina didn't even have a chance to scream, as her body melted, hair liquidizing and massing with her skin. Her uniform burnt away in the extraordinary heat. Within seconds, all that remained was a gently steaming pool of purplish matter. The gloop twitched and writhed, still alive in some primitive sense. Just as with the people of that jungle world, she had been de-evolved.
A successful demonstration. Quite a horrible effect, you see.
His voice seemed sadder than he'd have expected. Alone now, he headed down the right-hand passage. The neon lights were more sparse here, the floor sloping more steeply. He watched his step as he descended. Turning a corner, two guards stood in his way. They raised their weapons as the master raised his. Their screams reverberated down the dark passageway. More guards came running to intercept, but he cut them down without mercy. 9, 10 of them were turned to pools of sludge. The devolution gun sizzled under his fingers. Even so, as the clever guards turned and fled, he shot each one in the back. The master stepped lightly round and over the steaming pools. The unfortunate souls had been guarding a door which Georgina's pass card opened for him. He passed into another section of passageway. The guard's screams had evidently been heard. Ahead, the master heard running footsteps and hushed urgent conversation. Well, he did enjoy making an entrance. He went on, following the passageway as it wove through the rock. At last, the passage straightened out. A long corridor leading up to a large circular door of polished metal. In front of the door stood two more guards, speaking urgently with each other. They wore the same mustard uniform, but with additional armored plating on their upper arms to mark their status. One was fair-haired, with an array of freckles. Her older counterpart had a soft grey beard. Both faces were drawn and pale. They stood closer together than colleagues should. His hands rested on her shoulders, urging her to act. But when they finally saw him, the talking stopped. They moved together as one and stood hand in hand, blocking the entrance to the vault. The master advanced forward. If it was possible, they stood even closer together. The younger guard spoke up.
"So what are you waiting for? What do you want?"
she ordered with a failing tone. "Of course," he thought, surprising himself. Why hadn't he shot them straight away?
"I want your obedience or your death. It matters little to me. Move out of my way."
She looked up at her partner. He nodded. After that, the pair stood ashen in the incandescent light. They didn't budge.
"Very well."
The master raised the weapon again. They were embracing in the end. There was no goodbye kiss, no time for their lips to touch, only their eyes locked on each other as the master squeezed the trigger. They too became pathetic piles of gunge, the viscous remains slowly spread across the floor, the two pools merging into one. It was almost touching. He didn't need the ID pass this time. That's what the Advocate General's help had been for. A few numbers in an old-fashioned keypad was all it took. The vault door slid open with a dull whirring noise. He nimbly stepped over the two pools and entered, with his head held high. The repository's inner sanctum consisted of row after row of lockers, large and small. An elegant ladder on wheels provided access to higher boxes. He knew from his research that each locker was assigned by species of origin, and that each was accessed by a unique sequence of code. He just needed the skeleton code. No, the master code. And any item was his for the taking. So it had been just as well he'd been such a good friend to the Advocate General and been able to study her code key. He moved to one locker and typed in the code. The door sighed open. Inside, there was an ancient sword, bound in stasis, Martian in design, with a leather sheath of green. He didn't recognize the style or period, but the fact it was secreted here meant it must be priceless. For a moment, he considered taking it for himself. But no. No, he had to focus. He worked his way methodically through the lockers. The variety of artifacts and treasures were astonishing. He found a throne of ivory and gold, with a sculpted leopard on one side and a crocodile on the other. In a smaller locker, there were circular cans containing rolls of magnetic tape. The uppermost one was marked, in faded handwriting, "The Traitors." He smiled. Kindred spirits. In time, he found what he was looking for. Punching in the code, a door creaked open to reveal an ancient parchment covered in drawings. A unique map of the Boneyards of Nyth. At last! From his jacket pocket, he took a plastic sleeve and slipped the map carefully into it. He re-stitched the inner lining of the jacket especially, and the map fitted easily inside. A single button in the lining, and it was secure, and without upsetting the line of his suit. He left the vault, stepping lightly over the co-mingling pools of sludge. And then he looked back. The gunge seemed to be congealing, an active process, primitive life reaching to primitive life. Fascinating. But he couldn't allow himself to be distracted. The master paced quickly back the way he had come before, There had been at least a dozen guards. But now, there were only 8 pools of slime. His heart beat a little faster. He stopped to examine the nearest pool. As he watched, it moved, painfully, slowly. But with determination, the master wondered what these primitive entities felt or perceived, what their lives now were. As he did, the nearest pool moved inexorably towards him. He was horrified, but couldn't quite explain why. Besides, there was no time to be curious. He had to press on. Back he went, up and up. Soon he found the pool that had been Georgina, the way she had looked at him in that final moment. Georgina. He didn't know her full name, but she'd been good at her job and only wanted to help him. Something wasn't right. He never felt remorse. He never spared any of the countless multitude he'd killed, even the slightest thought. He had to get out of this place. He broke into a run, and so almost ran straight into a barrage of pulse fire. They missed him by inches as he dived back behind the cover of the rock. The culprits were the security detail, the one through which poor Georgina had let him pass, cowering behind a makeshift barricade. That wouldn't protect them from his de-evolving gun. He moved back out into the open. This time they hadn't time to fire. The barricade collapsed as guards fell into it, screaming, melting, coming undone. Their cries echoed horribly, each like a knife stabbing in his side. At last, there was silence. He took a breath, then clambered over the remains of the barricade, ignoring the few souls who had the sense to cower in terror and so had not been shot. They offered no resistance, so he let them live. Disquieted, almost feverish, the master stumbled on towards the grand entrance hall. His head was a whirl, the two guards standing close together just before he'd shot them. They'd had a connection, a relationship. He'd taken something special from them. And a worse thought. What was happening to him now? The once thriving entrance hall had been cleared of visitors. Now there was a line of security guards, each one behind a personal defense shield. Except one. This man was in the same mustard uniform as his fallen fellows. But he didn't have a shield. The master knew the type. This man would try to talk him down, to find reasonable terms for surrender. The master had no time for such indulgence and raised his gun, but couldn't fire. The man realized and quickly pressed his advantage. "My name is Captain Roger." He was trying to create rapport with the master, but it wouldn't work. It shouldn't work. "No one else needs to get hurt," the captain went on. The master twitched with repulsion.
"I would like that," he said.
"You'll be treated fairly," Captain Roger told him. "You're clearly unwell." The master could feel the sweat sticking to his collar, his body trembling.
"Something is happening to me," he said.
"I know," Captain Roger assured him. His hands were still up and open, offered out in communication. "You feel for them, don't you?" he said. "Those you shot tonight. You share their pain and loss."
"What have you done to me?"
The master's arm stiffened, the devolution gun still aimed at him.
"I suggest you tell me, and quickly."
"You're the one to blame," said the captain. "You've reverted us somehow, made us like our ancestors were. And they had certain abilities. Our ancestors didn't eat physical food, but psychic energy, emotions, personality. They gorged on the peoples of other worlds, but they also absorbed the feelings of the people they feasted on. They empathized with their prey. Gradually, my ancestors changed and learned to consume material food, but you seem to have turned back the clock. You shut them down.
And now they are feeding on me in return,
the master said. He should have been angry. But his voice wavered instead. And us, said the captain. I can feel it too. They'll feed on this whole world if we let them. That's why we've sealed the entrance. There's no way out of here now.
I can still get away, the master countered.
No, there's no way out, and we can't take any risks.
An inner rage still flickered inside the master.
I will kill you if I have to.
Can you? With what they're doing to you? Can you bear the weight of that? They'll never stop feasting.
The captain sighed, a hand on the back of his neck.
They're already taking who you are. You'll forget everything and everyone that ever mattered, including yourself.
The master moved backwards a step. For the first time in longer than he could remember, he was afraid. But he knew the young captain was right. He lowered the gun, and the captain came forward. He was a tall, young man, a full life ahead of him. If it hadn't been for what the master had done, now, trapped down here, this man would die too. They all would. So many of them.
I'm sorry, the master told him.
You're not the same man now, said the captain. We'll inform the authorities and let them advise. I don't think they can unseal the repository, not with so many of these things down here. But the Shadow Proclamation can advise the best action.
I'm sure they can,
the master nodded sadly.
I'm sorry for this.
He had to close his eyes to do it, squeezing them shut as he squeezed the trigger of the gun. The captain tried to scream, to grab him, to fight. And the master felt the whole man's life in the instant he melted away. The captain's memories became his. The sorrow he felt for the master, his pride in the guard in that room, and further back, tripping over in lush golden fields and staring in wonder at violet skies, the smell of his wife's hair and baked pastries, a daughter tucked under his arm. As quickly as the master felt that life, it was all snatched away. The captain was gone. The master fell forward into the pool that had just been a man. He crawled away, though the sludge dragged at him, pulling him back. Not physically, but mentally. He started to regain his focus. Before him stood a line of horrified mustard uniformed people with weapons. He knew the mustard signified something and that these people meant him harm. He lashed out, brandishing the gun in his hand.
Run! He barked at them. Run or die!
They didn't run. Some cried out, others raised their guns. But he would not let them harm him. He had to survive. So he gathered all of himself that remained.
You will obey me. You will run away. You will obey me. Please. Please!
They didn't run. Not all of them. He had no choice but fire. As before, with each new victim came with it its own awful pang of loss, eroding him. The gun weighed heavily in his hands. He couldn't kill more. Could he? Did he have to? If he was to get back to his TARDIS before they locked him up and he forgot who he was. Yes, there was a stampede in his head, or around him, as they passed.
He didn't really know anymore. But he made his escape. Step after faltering step, up the gradual, exhausting slope of the corridor, until his legs gave out under him. He fell against the glass wall, through which something loomed. A huge shape. One he knew he'd seen before. The whale shark. And trailing in its wake, the small scavenger. They were both swimming close, sensing his weakness, seeing him as prey. Perhaps that was just his imagination. Shoulder pressed against the glass wall, he forced himself to his feet and went on. He just had to keep on. Somehow he fought to the end of the line. There was a shape there he recognized, an object that he knew meant safety and escape, though he could not place its name. But between him and his escape stood a last remaining figure. Whilst he wore a guard's uniform and had a pulse gun in his hands, they looked more like a child in a costume. The boy's weapon clattering in his hold. They stood facing one another, in each other's way.
"You've murdered all these people. I can't let you leave this place."
He hurled himself at the master. They both crashed to the floor in a tangle of limbs.
"Stop, please. You have to stop. You'll make me kill you."
With a final roar, the master pinned the young man to the floor beneath him. He pressed the devolution gun into his face. Wide eyes looked up at him, white and glassy. But the master couldn't do it. Not another life. Calling up on his remaining rage, the master hurled the gun away. It crumpled against the ground and its energy fizzed out. The master threw the boy to his feet.
"Run, keep running and don't look back, or I will kill you! Obey me!"
And listening to the sound of his footsteps hit the ground as they ran, he moved to the vessel. He went desperately on, until he collapsed through the door of the TARDIS. Just passing over the threshold, his head felt so much clearer. He knew who he was again. He knew what he'd almost lost. But he still knew he was being fed on. His Nehru suit was splattered with dust and singed, but the primitive creatures were mentally squirming through his very being. It took a tremendous effort of will to reach the console. And as his clumsy fingers worked the controls, the weight of his actions bore down upon him. He had hurt those people. He had taken their lives. The woman's face stayed with him, the one he'd tricked into taking him down to the caverns. She'd had a name. He'd known her name. But now it was out of his grasp. His memories were indistinct. More feelings than images. People in mustard colours. A lot of shouting and fear. And out in the water, the whale shark and the bottom dweller in its wake. What did that mean? Where had he learnt that? Everything was starting to fade. He'd worked the controls without realizing. The central column rose and fell. The great engine stirring under his feet spoke of something deep, of who he'd once been. He tightened his grip on the console. Long, shuddering breaths as he tried to calculate how long he had left. This machine could only delay the inevitable. The connection they'd long shared might buy him a few moments at most, clinging to his identity. With a sudden rush, he had an idea. If only he could keep himself together long enough. Desperately, he worked the switches and dials. A console panel flipped open and a prong extended. Lenses emerged from the end. A gadget revolved, stiffly, focusing on his face. He brushed his jacket clean, straightened his tie.
Recording begin. Now pay attention. There isn't much time. I have made a blunder. And it looks as if it will cost me dearly. I was arrogant. I was foolish. You need to do better than that. In the course of tonight's events, stealing the map to the Boneyards of Nyth, I discovered that the people of this planet ate personalities, consumed personalities, in their first forms. This recording is my way, your way, of preventing further damage to my future. Soon, my body, your body, will finally give in to exhaustion caused by this mental strain. You won't know who you'll be when you wake up. Regeneration isn't necessary, and wouldn't fix the issue at hand. You are losing yourself either way. What is the point of a Time Lord without his history?
Tears pricked his eyes. He couldn't tell if they were for himself or for the people he'd butchered. He brushed them furiously away.
You can see these wretched tears? This is not you! Do you see what you've been reduced to? This is weakness. You must be strong. You must understand who you are. All the things you're due to do are still out there in the stars. You must vanquish your enemies with a smile. You must never give up. You don't know if this will work, or whether you'll be able or want to remember who you are. You must!
He patted his jacket.
You will find a map here to the Boneyards of Nyth. Use it. Finish what I started. Claim the ultimate power.
Tears clouded his vision. He could feel the hungry, twisting things inside his head, feasting. The master felt the console room start to spin about him. His thoughts began to unravel. Who was this man he was referring to? What did he mean? His hands tightened into fists. That familiar, flickering rage was still there again, ready to fight back. Perhaps rage was all he would have left.
You have so much more to conquer, to dominate. You are known, universally known. They will obey you, all of them. Everyone in this galaxy and the next. Everyone in this universe. And the next. They've not seen the last of you. Never forget who you are. You are the master. And you will obey me.
The master buckled. He fell onto the console. The whole room lurched. The lights dimmed. A mighty clangor rose from the TARDIS's depths. Well, that might all have been in his head. He was reeling, falling, already on the floor. He stared up at the ceiling, lights whirling all around. There were voices now, recriminations from the past. He glimpsed faces, taunting him, citing awful things he'd done he could not remember. His world went black. The time lost to him was a mystery. When he woke, he uncomfortably rose to his feet. His whole being ached. He could hardly think straight. He had no sense of where or who he was. But a light blinked in front of him. A tiny, persistent red light on a device he almost recognized. He reached out to the controls beside the light and touched play.